Good evening, friends. This is Carolyn Evers, touching my favorite companion here.
Not from there, you're not.
Yeah, I am. I'm touching you.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard. We have technology working for us tonight. We have liftoff. My goodness, bit of a change.
That means liftoff, huh?
Something like that.
Well, friends, I think we have a very exciting show tonight, and with a very exciting guest, Michelangelo. And if you get our emails, you would have understood that Michelangelo was our guest tonight. So if you're not getting our emails, come to one of our websites and sign up for them. Richard, what would you recommend that they come?
Yes.
And sign up.
Go to the 2012countdown.com and sign up on the top or bottom of any page on that website, and that will get you on our email list.
That's good. It works for me. Anyway, we have lots of news that we send out to people, and you might be interested in receiving it. So, for those of you who know our work, you understand that we connect with individuals on the other side, individuals who have crossed over. And I will tell you this, that Richard teaches people that skill. It is a skill. It's not something that you're born with. It's something that you learn. And he is excellent at this. So keep that in mind in case you want to speak to family members or friends and you want to learn that skill. Richard is the one to teach it to you.
Thank you, Kim.
And he's very qualified. Yes, you're very qualified, Richard. You're a master at it.
And so if this does interest you, just go to rightbrainmagic.com and you'll find it all there.
Yes, you'll get all the information that you need. And there's so much that we learn when we can touch with other consciousness, not just people on the other side, but our life around us, to understand the consciousness that we live with. It's exciting. And so what you need to do is, if you have a picture of Michelangelo, put it up in that picture in your third eye and call him quietly. And it's a good chance that you will experience what Richard is discussing and experiencing. And so, Richard, if you would be kind enough to call forth Michelangelo and we can start this journey, I would appreciate it.
Yes, it's as if he's flooding me with his energy as we start this. Quite amazing. Very, very loving, very heart-centered. Really, that was the essence of the man, I would say. I mean, I've enjoyed a lot of his work, but I can't say I felt a relationship with him as an individual through his artwork. But experiencing him now, there is this love that pours forth from him. And in a sense, that's really his core essence. There are other elements that are there. I feel the, you might say, complexity of the individual. He's a very intelligent individual, I sense, but not devious, not complex, perhaps, in the living of life, not a political animal by any means, but essentially driven from this essence of love. It's quite fascinating. I hadn't really thought about what his nature would be, but that's as I experience him.
That's beautiful, Richard. Thank you. And I know that Michelangelo has a message for us, so perhaps you might connect with him and bring forth that message, if you would.
See what I can do.
Good.
It is a privilege to come forth in this manner to communicate with all of you across the centuries. And it never occurred to me, really, that I might get this opportunity. It is not something that I drove, you might say, but in fact, I was approached in this instance by Carolyn and Richard, as a result of them reflecting on some of my artwork. And I have been watching events in this time, as indeed so many individuals who have been, you might say, important figures in your world at various points, are watching the unfolding of events in your time. It is an extraordinary time on that beautiful blue-green planet called Earth, a unique experience in creation and a special creation that, in my view, most of humanity truly does not appreciate. They take it for granted. But it is a jewel in the path of creation, the cycle of creation, you might say. And I am honored that I was given the opportunity to come forth and to express the gifts that I was given through my artwork, and that much of that artwork has survived down into your time, despite some of the very challenging times that have occurred between that time and now. And I feel that I was very privileged in the sense that I was given the opportunity to act as that conduit, you might say, for the gifts, the information that I was given. I do not claim what I was able to create for myself, but rather I was a conduit. And indeed, if I, in hindsight, examine the path that I choose, because indeed all souls choose their parents and the key events in their lives before they come. And so I chose my parents, and indeed the opportunity to work with a great sculptor from an early age. So this was very valuable and indeed important for my ability to bring forth what I came to bring forth in that life. And I'm very pleased that I was able to leave those legacies, those what I frankly consider to be great masterpieces of sculpture. David, the Bruges Madonna, the Pieta, to mention just a few. And as I said, I do not claim these for myself, but rather I was a conduit for that gift, that expression of love, you might say, that came through those pieces of artwork. I chose, for many reasons, those key characters of Yeshua and his mother Mary. Firstly, because it was a time when those figures were important in that time because of the role of the Catholic Church, but indeed they have continued to be important through to your time, and so they resonate with people. Indeed, it was the core reason that I created those pieces, was to, you might say, trigger within people a sense of themselves, a sense of the truth within them, the power that is within them, the love that is within them. And even though many people do not understand that that is what's happening when they view these pieces of artwork, in truth, that is what is happening. And I am very excited to be able to witness that having occurred down through the years, but indeed continuing to happen in your time. People who stand in front of the Bruges Madonna or in front of Pieter or David, they all feel this sense of wonder, this sense of perfection, this extraordinary expression that comes through that piece of marble. And again, what is happening is that the individual is opening up a connection with themselves within. They are connecting on a level with the perfection of themselves. There is almost a shock in many people when they witness the perfection that is carried in those pieces, and it is quite intentional that they trigger this connection within. And so I am pleased to be able to express this to you in this manner, because most people have not understood that that was the purpose, or that indeed is what is happening in response to these sculpted pieces. And a very similar experience is triggered by those who witness my frescoes in the Sistine Chapel. They too trigger a similar, although a slightly different, response. There is also included in that response a sense of awe, a sense of wonder, a sense of grandeur, of the total of creativity. Yes, the imagery is very consistent with the teachings of the Catholic Church, and they are consistent with the messages of the Bible on a level. But in truth, there is an expression within the totality of that work which carries that sense of awe of the totality of creation, which truly is awe-inspiring in its nature. And so these key threads I was able to leave for posterity, for people to experience down through time, even to your day, and hopefully into the future. So I firstly wanted to take the opportunity to express these ideas, these understandings, these notions to you, because, as I said, they are not well understood. And people, if they reflect on my words and reflect on their reactions when they have examined these pieces, or in the future, having listened to my words, then examine their reactions when they do examine these pieces in the future, you will understand rather more what I'm saying and understand your own experience of yourself as a result of witnessing these pieces. So this was in large measure a key focus of those most striking examples of my work that I have mentioned. There were other threads in my work also, in many ways. Of course, quite a deal of my work was commissioned for particular sponsors, for example, the Medicis, but also others. And so in those cases, they reflected rather more the requirements of the one who was paying the bill, you might say. But these core pieces, in my view, reflect the heart of my work. Of course, there were many other things that I was involved with, but if I were to distill down the heart of my legacy, it is that which I have expressed. And I also wanted to talk to you a little more about the similarities, you might say, between my time and your time, because they are indeed great, and perhaps they truly are with every time that has existed since what you might call the fall in Atlanta some 13,000 or so years ago, and your time. But that is, there are experiences of suppression, of domination by particular individuals who have within their grasp great money and power. The primary individuals in my time were either in the Catholic Church via the Pope of the day or through the Medici family, who dominated Florence in certainly the early part of my life. They were extraordinarily wealthy and powerful, and they were, you might say, a power unto themselves. Indeed, the Medici family was deeply interwoven with the Catholic Church, as you may know if you understand your history. And they manipulated the world quite fearlessly in the time that they operated. And in many ways, they are not too different from how the Rothschilds and their cohorts are in your world today. They were not so comprehensive in their influence as the Rothschilds are today, because the opportunity was not there to operate on a global basis in the way that the Rothschilds do today. But certainly the experience of life for so many in Florence in particular, also in Rome and in other parts of Italy, as a result of what you might call the hand of the Medici, was very real indeed. That power was very great, and some suffered greatly as a result of that power, and indeed had their life circumstances destroyed, if not their life itself. And so on a level, it is not very different from what is happening in your time, although, as I said, the scale of it is a little different. And the other thing that is very different in your time from my time is that influence by those what you might consider dark forces is reaching a crescendo in your time. We on our side are able to witness the warmongering, for example, that is so loud at the moment. So many threads of destruction that are being fostered in this time to tear apart the fabric of life as you know it in so many ways, to bring humanity further under the control and manipulation of these powerful forces. And so you have this new force emerging in the Middle East known as ISIS, seemingly a force unto itself. You are seeing this battle over Ukraine and all that is being postured over this. You have all of the actions in the Middle East with Israel and what remains of Palestine and so on. And you have such things as Ebola in Africa, and of course so much suppression and destruction of the people of Africa, and indeed native peoples all over the planet. All of this is intensifying on so many levels, and so it is reaching a crescendo, indeed just as it was always planned, because you may or may not understand that the essential nature of the plan was for the dark to believe they would have complete control over humanity, only to see that control ripped from them. And that is the model that is being unfurled, you might say, in your time. And it is such a joy to be able to witness these changes emerging in your timeline. And it is in your very near future that you will see these changes begin to emerge. The time in which you live was long planned. Many of you are aware that you are in that time of alignment with Galactic Center, that not only the Long Count Mayan calendar, but many other traditions from many other, you might say, cultures have pointed to. This understanding was held by the ancient peoples of the planet through the time since the fall in Atlantis. This message was carried through the oral traditions, through the oral myths and legends. It is just that it has not been fully understood for a long time, and its expression has been suppressed in your time for the most part. But it is happening, my friends. It is unfolding, and it is a great joy to be able to witness it from where I stand, and in my own way, having sown some seeds to connect people with themselves as they witness my work. I feel I have in my own way contributed in a small way to this unfolding, to this renaissance, you might consider it, in your time, just as there was such an event in my time. And so it is.
Oh, that is so wonderful. And I want to thank the two of you for coming forth and giving this information to our listeners. And to our listeners, I would like to say, if you have a question for Michelangelo, please call in soon, because this hour slips by so quickly.
And while we're waiting, I'd like to ask Michelangelo a
question about something that I heard him or heard mentioned about his work. That is it true that somehow when you saw a block of marble that you could see the statue inside of that marble, and it was a case of you just releasing it? Give us a little information about that if you can.
It is true that I was able to, you might say, visualize the figure within the marble before I began to carve it. And it is, in many ways, not something that I consciously did. It was just there. I just knew what it was that I needed to bring forth from that piece. And there are some of my unfinished works that enable people to see this rather well, I feel. Some of those in Florence that are unfinished give people a sense of how I was, in essence, liberating the figure from the block of stone. So yes, it was very much like this in my experience. It was not, as I say, something that I consciously set out to do. I would see this piece of marble and I could see the figure inside it. So truly it was a matter of liberating that figure. That was my focus. In a way, the work that I did was so easy. It is hard for people to imagine that my sculpting simply flowed out of me. I literally knew what I was going to do. I didn't have to plan the detail. It simply flowed out of me. I simply executed what was inside of me. That is why I say it was not something that I did. It was simply a gift that was given to me to express, and I expressed it to the best of my ability.
That's beautiful. Did you have other lifetimes as a sculptor? Did your monads send other fingers of consciousness to Earth as a sculptor?
There were other lifetimes where I, or should I say my monad, sent forth a finger of consciousness to be an artist. And indeed, I look at those lifetimes as, in many ways, practice for what I was able to express in my lifetime. So, as you would probably know, there are often patterns in the roles that a monad might choose to play out on planet Earth. And being an artist in a general sense, particularly working with the hands, either painting or sculpting, was something that I had done over many lifetimes. And so, as I say, I look at that lifetime as Michelangelo as being the pinnacle of that practice, that bringing forth of that art form.
That's beautiful. I would like to take a moment and discuss the Bruges Madonna. There's been a lot of talk about the Bruges Madonna since the Monuments Men came out with their film. And I sense a translucence about that statue from what I can see. Is that accurate?
The marble itself is not translucent, but rather it is the coloring of the stone and the polish on the stone that gives you that sense of it being translucent. There is almost a slight bluishness in the color of the stone that is invoking that. It is a very subtle thing. In essence, it is white, of course, but there is that touch to it that contributes to that effect. So I anticipate it is these effects that give you that sense.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you can tell us about the Bruges Madonna? That, of course, is depicting the mother and the child as you depicted in other sculptures. But can you give us some little insight that you enjoyed while you were sculpting this?
As you may know, my late 20s was perhaps my most productive and powerful period when I created my greatest sculpted works. The three best known pieces of my work you might consider being the Bruges Madonna, the Pietà, and David were in fact all sculpted in perhaps a relatively short period. And so on a level, they are all related because they came forth in a similar time of my life. But that image, that connection between the mother and the child, which of course represented the Christ child, as people would refer to it as, the child being Yeshua and the mother being Mother Mary, it is such a powerful image, not only because of the connection to Yeshua and Mother Mary, but also because the role of the mother and child and the nurturing and protection by the mother of the child that is so inherent in that work is such a fundamental message to all of humanity. Everyone has been a child, and everyone understands the power and the wonder and the value of that nurturing. Not every individual has experienced that nurturing, but it is such a powerful expression of that nurturing role. And on a level, it is nurturing humanity because of the relationship that most people hold, at least in the Western world, in regard to the role of Yeshua and his mother in connecting with humanity and leading humanity, you might say. So this has been very important. And so there are so many threads to, you might say, this connection that humanity has to that piece of sculpture.
Thank you. I would imagine that you started sculpting at a very early age. Is that true?
Yes, I began to experiment with carving as a young boy. In fact, I was apprenticed at the age of 13, and that apprenticeship grew out of things that I was already doing and had been doing from about the age of 6. So it was not, in a sense, something that I learnt so much as it just came out of me. It was a gift that I had, and my father also had an interest in these areas to an extent, and so he encouraged me in these things and set up or worked hard to ensure that that apprenticeship that I received at the age of 13 was put into place. And so all of these threads came together. But yes, I grew up with this drive to liberate what I could see inside of stone.
That is amazing that you started at such a young age and so accomplished. That just truly is amazing as I can see it. So I do have a question, and you might know this. Has your monad sent another finger of consciousness to Earth to be an artisan of some sort?
Sorry, are you asking since his time? Any others since his time? Is that what you're saying? What do you mean now?
Well, I mean now.
There is no finger of consciousness that is associated with my monad that is present as an artisan, you might say. However, my monad has sent forth a finger of consciousness to participate in the preparation for the changes that are coming forth in this time. So there is a presence, but not as an artisan, as you would call it.
Thank you. Did you ever teach other people how to sculpt?
It was not my focus. Some people felt that I was selfish in that regard. I tended to be very insular, you might say, in how I lived my life. There were a few people who were very, you might say, precious to me throughout my life, who I was deeply connected to, but I really was not a social individual, nor was I driven to teach skills to others. And some have expressed their disapproval that I did not pass on my skills strongly in that manner, that I did not cultivate a school of some sort to teach what I knew, but it was not my focus. My focus was to bring forth and express the gifts that I had been given. And so, no, I was not a great teacher of the skill that I had.
It was my understanding that you actually went to the quarry and picked out your blocks of stone. Is that accurate?
That is very accurate. As I said earlier, I would look at the block of stone and I could see what was inside it to be liberated. And so I would go to the quarry, and when I could see inside a block what it was I wanted to bring forth, then I would choose that block from the quarry and have it delivered to my studio to work on it.
That's quite amazing, especially when I think of the size of some of your works of art. I was thinking of David in particular. That's a very large piece. So is the Pieta.
Yes, David is a large piece. Indeed, David came forth from a block that someone else had started to do some work upon and had abandoned it. And fortunately, the work that they had done did not in any manner impact what I could see by way of David in that piece. And so it was not impacted by the prior work that had been done upon it.
Well, we're certainly, as a human race, gifted to receive such gorgeous works. We have a caller, Maria, on line one. Maria, good evening, dear.
Hi, Carolyn. It's Maria.
Maria. Sorry.
Yes.
So, Maria, what question do you have, darling?
Okay. I have a question. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was in a conference by a gentleman, William Henry, and he had studied the domes of many buildings and had discovered a lot of codes in those domes with messages, hidden messages for our ascension. And the program or his presentation was just breathtaking in the time and the accuracy and everything that he presented. So I have a question for Michelangelo. Are there any codes, geometric codes in the chapel, in the dome of the 16th chapel?
Did you understand the question, Richard?
No, I didn't. It was a little broken up for me.
Would you repeat your question again?
Yeah. Whether there are any codes. William Henry says that the domes in most of the buildings are gateways, and they have the paintings have codes and and messages hidden in the painting.
Ah.
Is that the case for the Sistine Chapel?
My work was not created to carry codes in the manner that the Knights Templar placed codes and information within the Gothic cathedrals. My work as you see it was a simple expression of what is there, aimed at bringing forth the elements that I have expressed to you earlier in this call. So no, there were no secret codes that I placed in, for example, the frescoes of the Sistine Chapel.
Thank you for your question, Maria.
Thank you.
You're welcome, dear. I thought it was interesting that Michelangelo mentioned the Templars with the codes in the Gothic cathedrals. Did he wish to elaborate on that?
There was a connection of sorts between myself and those who formed the Knights Templar. That connection is more at a monad level. And indeed, my monad sent forth fingers of consciousness to participate in that time of the Knights Templar. So there are indeed connections of that nature. And indeed, there was, you might say, another finger of consciousness associated with me that actually participated in the carvings that were done in some of the Gothic cathedrals. So there is a connection of sorts between myself and that work as it came forth in that time.
Thank you for your answer. I'm at the point now where I'm so overwhelmed by the beauty of what you have been doing that it's hard to come up with another question, except I sense this emotional response. When we look at your work, I sense this emotional response of love. I suspect that that was a goal of yours, wasn't it?
Yes. If you examine the nature of what it means to be a human being, and if you understand how a human being is created, love is at the essence of everything. And in a sense, it is why when Richard sensed my energy, the fundamental essence of me is love. And when you are seeking to awaken the connection for people within, the essence of that connection is love. And so very much love and that connection with love within is a key focus of the work that I created. It was my gift to humanity, you might say, that opening of a door by which people could connect with their love within.
Truly beautiful. What a wonderful thought. Now, you're working on the other side, I'm certain. Is there anything, any information that you can give us with respect to what you see is on the horizon? You know, you talked about some of the war events here on Earth. What do you see in our future?
Firstly, there are some who wonder what it is like to be where I am. Is the experience similar to being on planet Earth? Do I have a physical form? Or do individuals who have crossed over and continued on carry a physical form? And the answer to that is no. We do not carry a physical form. We are, in a sense, an energetic expression. And as we come forth to those who are able to connect with us in a manner where they are able to witness images that we might send, then that in a sense is an energetic image which is sent to correlate with either how we expressed in the physical in that time or to convey a particular sense for the individual, but that is not actually reflecting how we look today. So I wanted to clarify that for those who ask such a question. And
thank you.
In regard to the future, I see an intensifying of the negative interactions, you might say, that are currently occurring on your planet. And I see quite soon, as I mentioned earlier, the emergence of this new consciousness, this transition initially with those who bring forth and step into this perfected physical form that I see coming forth for those who choose that path in the very near future. So I see this separation that has been spoken of emerging, where those who wish to move forward will, in a sense, step out of this difficult, challenging consciousness that will continue to get darker. And those who do not choose to step beyond it will be subject to it. But those who choose to step into this new experience will be, in a sense, set free of it. They will be in this consciousness, but not of it, you might say. And it is quite fascinating to view that scenario unfolding as I look into your near future.
Thank you so much for that information. I certainly do appreciate it. And Michelangelo, we appreciate so much you coming forth, talking about your work, talking about your monad, and I would like to thank you in a special way and thank Richard in a special way for bringing you forth. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Carolyn.
So, Richard, we really don't have a lot of time here to discuss this, but Michelangelo did discuss the Knights Templar and some of the carvings and work that they did in the Gothic cathedrals. Do you want to add anything to that?
What the Templars told us is that every element of the Gothic cathedrals carried information about the teachings and the secrets of the Templars. And some of those carvings, for example, were alchemical in nature, but that's not the only thing that was expressed there. So many threads and elements that were included in that work. So, yes, they encoded so much in those buildings. Some of it was related to the shape of the building. Some of them was the location because of the energy lines that crossed where they were located, the way the water was flowing under the buildings, just so many elements were brought together to bring forth those buildings. One of those shapes on the floor, Carolyn, I can't think of the name, where you walk the path.
Oh, yes, I can't think of it right at the moment.
I think people know what we're talking about. Labyrinth.
I can't.
The labyrinth.
Labyrinth, right.
On the floors, which were placed essentially over, usually where the building crossed, you might say, because they formed a cross. So, you know, there was so much expressed. As we've talked about before, the gemstones in the glass that was used. They're just amazing, you know, from top to bottom. And the role that they performed, the key ones, in clarifying the human form to activate the chakras and to clear the body to enable it to progress spiritually. Quite amazing what is contained in those buildings.
Richard, I know Michelangelo is still around. I had another question about the Bruges Madonna. Did he sculpt that on site, or did he ship that from his workshop?
It was not sculpted on site, and indeed it was moved there some years after its creation. It was not originally located there, but moved there some years after it was sculpted. It has become associated with that location, but it was not purposely sculpted for that location, though it has become its home.
Well, that's quite interesting to think that it was shipped all that distance.
There was no hurry involved, and it could be carefully moved. It could be packed in a manner that it could be moved quietly and carefully, and there were no fast cars in those days to run the transport off the road, you might say.
I love that. There was no hurry. Thank you, Michelangelo, again for your input. And Richard, we only have a couple minutes left. We have about 5 minutes left. Was there something that you wish to discuss? Why don't you mention about how you teach people to work like you're working tonight and where they can go for more information?
Yes, I mentioned the website earlier, which is rightbrainmagic.com. But, work is simply helping people to understand that they can do this themselves.
Absolutely.
It's not something that there's a tendency to think that when you do this kind of work that it, you know, there's something special about it. There isn't really. Anyone can do this. I mean, it takes some discipline and focus and a particular approach to do, but you know, it's like any skill. It is a skill that anyone could learn. And so what I do in an hour is to step people through a process where they begin to understand that indeed they can do this. And, you know, there are some people struggle a bit with it, but many people take to it like a duck to water. It's extraordinary how quickly some people progress with this. Very exciting. And it really is a matter of being open to the fact that you can do it. Anybody can do it. It's not like it's unusual. It's part of the human makeup. Like all of the clair skills ultimately are clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience. We all have that ability. Some of us open these things more easily than others, but we all have it. It's not unique to certain individuals. There does seem to be some evidence that if you've practiced it over many lifetimes, as Carolyn has done, then these skills open up a little more readily and comprehensively. Not many can do what she can do in that regard, but the fundamental skills are common, are something that any of us can do.
Thank you, Richard. And it is so exciting when you get information from other consciousness, like we have gotten information about the history of an area from a tree and what was under the ground where the tree is. I mean, these are really exciting things. And the people, we were talking, communicating with a tree in a park and what that tree had to say about the history of the land and the people who come and enjoy the park. There's, when you work with this discipline, there is so much that you can get out of it as far as your life is concerned.
Yes, it's it really is quite extraordinary. I mean, humanity for the most part has forgotten that we are here as protectors, guardians, you might say, for what's on this beautiful planet. And in so many ways, it's been placed here for our experience, for our enjoyment. And that's not to say that nature itself is not a valid reason for and unto itself, because it is. But the extraordinary beauty that's here and the wonder and the ability to be able to communicate with it and immerse yourself in the totality of what is here is just amazing. And it's a door that opens in a completely different way when, you know, you can, for example, walk outside and maybe there's a deer there or a rabbit or, you know, a frog or whatever, butterfly, you can communicate with these things. And It might sound bizarre, but it's true. And there is a communication in nature, an interaction in nature that most of humanity doesn't understand. You know, we are taught that these things are all separate and independent, and, you know, we wonder at how, for example, fish navigate back to the rivers that they might have come from, or turtles return to the same beach and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's so much interconnection in life that we, in large measure, are isolated from. And it's sad on a level.
Absolutely. It might seem bizarre, but there was a time when I communicated with an orange, and it told me how the tree that it grew on explained to the oranges that they would grow and be sent to people who would consume them, and that they would give to, you know, participate in the nourishment of humanity. I mean, those are just exciting things.
They are. They are. Very much so.
Yes. So, Richard, we have 1 minute. Did you add anything? Excuse me, I can't stop laughing.
No, I just want to thank you for creating the context for this work, Carolyn, for us to be able to bring forth Michelangelo in this way, and to overcome your own version of this lurgy that I've been carrying a few days, which I so generously gave to you.
I know, you are generous to a fault.
So I thank you for your efforts in bringing all of this forth and holding it all together. And it's good to hear you very much more on song than, you know, you've been for a while. It's wonderful to hear.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you for your work. And I would like to, again, thank Michelangelo for coming and giving us this beautiful history. And I'd like to thank those at BBS Radio who support us and take care of us. Thanks to everyone. And until next week, we'll see you soon. We send all of you our blessings.
Indeed. Good night for now.
Good night for now.